Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, March 6, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The Region 5 basketball tournament opened in Sitka on Tuesday. 20 teams will be in town for the week, competing for state tournament berths in 2A, 3A, and 4A classifications. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The Sitka Lady Wolves won the first game of the 3A regional tournament Tuesday afternoon. The Lady Wolves defeated the Petersburg Lady Vikings 40-35. Sitka will advance in the winner's bracket and meet the top-seeded Mount Edgecombe Lady Braves this evening at 6:30 p.m. Sophomore Sid Riggs led scoring for the Lady Wolves with 14 points. Juniors Megan Reed and Issa Rammel scored 12 and 5 points, respectively. Petersburg freshman standout Kylie Wallace led all scorers with 16 points. Junior Grace Weller scored 11. The Lady Vikings are not out of the running in this double elimination tournament. They'll play the loser of today's contest between Sitka and Mount Edgecombe and have a shot at the finals. The Petersburg boys also went down in the first round of the Region 5 tournament, losing to the Mount Edgecombe Braves 41-25. Mount Edgecombe took an early lead over the Vikings in the first quarter and extended it to 32-16 at halftime. At the opening tip-off of the second half, the Braves went into a delay offense, which kept the ball on their side of the court for much of the play in the third and fourth quarters. When they did get the ball, the Vikings had trouble getting it into their big men at post and could not use their size advantage. The Braves will take on the top-seeded Sitka Wolves tonight at 8:15 p.m. Petersburg will play the loser of that game for a chance to play in the final. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Pictures from the tournament, updated brackets, and game schedules are all available on our website, kcaw.org. All games will be played at the Mount Edgecombe Gym. Tickets for individual games and tournament passes are available at the door. Ferry sailings will be reduced if a proposal to cut the Alaska Marine Highway budget makes it through the legislature. A House subcommittee examining the Transportation Department budget recommended the $3.5 million cut. That's about a 2% reduction in the overall ferry budget proposed by Governor Sean Parnell. Deputy Transportation Commissioner Ruben Yost oversees the Marine Highway system.
We'll look at other potential cost reductions that wouldn't translate into service cuts, but for cuts of magnitude of $3.5 million, we'd look at some reduced weeks of service, and typically we'd achieve that by one or more vessels staying in winter layup for a few weeks longer.
He says reduced service would lower revenues from ferry fares by an additional $750,000. Yost is not ready to say what routes would be affected. Some lawmakers are questioning plans for new shuttle ferries that will serve northern southeast Alaska. Meanwhile, some members of the state's Ferry Advisory Board are having mixed reactions. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Ferry officials recently released preliminary descriptions and drawings of the proposed dayboat Alaska-class ferry. They described a pair of identical 280-foot, 300-passenger, 53-vehicle shuttles that would link Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. Legislators questioned the plan during a joint meeting of the House and Senate Transportation Committees. Juneau Senator Dennis Egan asked Deputy Transportation Commissioner Ruben Yost about handling harsh storms with a partially open car deck.
What happens when that ship has to turn around and the spray comes into the open stern? I mean, that really worries me. It seems to me like you'd have to get a whole bunch of Marine Highway employees with blowtorches to thaw out the cars so they can get off.
First of all, you're talking about a fairly extreme situation. Second of all, those
situations.
Granted.
I mean, we have had cancellations of the Lakati more than once.
Correct.
This winter.
Correct.
You know, we have extreme situations.
Right. The turnaround situations with the Lakani are primarily because of that ice spray freezing on the davits of the lifeboats. They don't threaten the stability of the ship. They threaten the ability to launch if there's a crisis with the ship for other reasons.
Plans call for a bow door that opens like a clam to load and unload passengers and vehicles. Sitka Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins asked Marine Highway General Manager John Falvey about similarities with the Ferry Estonia. That ship sank in the Baltic Sea about 20 years ago, killing 850 people. Strong winds and waves broke open the bow door, flooding the car deck.
What safety considerations are being taken into account with this bow door? What ensures that that kind of thing will never happen in the southeast?
When the Estonia capsized, yes, the bow door failed. Rules and regulations have changed, thus requiring internal doors, watertight doors, or waterproof doors, depending upon whether you have an open deck in the back or an enclosed deck.
He said the shuttles would be built to those standards. Yost told legislators that the state expects design and construction to cost no more than the $117 million in the Alaska Class Ferries budget. Wrangell Representative Peggy Wilson asked whether that included terminal modifications to accommodate the ships.
For the adjustments to the harbor itself, where they have to make adjustments for the front end roll-on, roll-off, is that included in here?
No, this is just vessel construction costs and project development costs. There will be required end berths, probably bow berths, at Haines. And we estimate that cost now at approximately $20 million. So that's an additional cost.
Yost and Falvey also presented shuttle plans to the state's Marine Transportation Advisory Board. There was no time for discussion or questions, but afterward, member Mike Korsmo, a Skagway tugboat captain, said he worries about freight capacity.
They're saying right in the report that you can't put a car on and have somebody pick it up on the other end. Well, the freight comes that way to Skagway quite a bit, where a tractor comes down, grabs the container, takes it off, and that's where most of our store supplies come.
The two-shuttle plan replaces an earlier effort to build a larger ferry with more amenities. Juneau Chamber of Commerce CEO and advisory board member Kathy Romick said that became too big and expensive.
Now we see something that I believe it's within our grasp, and I hope that the governor and DOT moves forward with it and we don't pause and take too much time arguing whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. I think these vessels will be a great addition to the Alaska Marine Highway.
Public testimony is on the agenda for future Ferry Advisory Board and Transportation Committee meetings. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Juneau.
A proposed bounty on sea otters drew some criticism from the public, followed by no discussion at all from the Petersburg Borough Assembly during its regular meeting Monday afternoon. The agenda included a resolution in support of Senate Bill 60, which is sponsored by Sitka Senator Bert Stedman. It would require the state to pay a $100 bounty for every sea otter that is lawfully killed. Under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, only Alaska natives may hunt the animals. The measure is aimed at encouraging such hunts and, ultimately, at reducing the impacts of growing population of otters that eat the shellfish species on which commercial crabbers and divers depend. But Kuprianov's Joan Kotzer, who is a commercial fisherman, was one of a couple people to speak against the bill.
And while I am extremely sympathetic to crabbers and divers, every commercial fisheries has its nuisance animal competition. Trawlers have sea lions, longliners have orcas, and gillnetters have humpbacks that rip up their nets. None of these gear types have bounties on their competing species. Bounties were an archaic, misguided policy in the last century, and there's no place for them in this century. Bounties are not scientific fisheries management tools, and legislators are not fisheries biologists. This bill would set a very bad precedent and would smear Alaska's reputation as cutting-edge fisheries managers.
Kotzer said the biggest threat facing the crab and dive fisheries is ocean acidification, which impedes development of invertebrate shells. It's caused by too much carbon dioxide in the ocean, and Kotzer emphasizes that sea otters help counteract that problem by promoting healthy kelp forests. Kelp absorbs CO2, and otters eat sea urchins that kill the kelp. When it was time for the assembly to consider the bounty issue, no one made a motion to get it on the table, so the matter was effectively dropped without discussion. Mayor Mark Jensen, who is also a fisherman, had put the resolution on the agenda, but the mayor is not allowed to make motions. Speaking later by phone, Jensen said he supported the measure.
Just to get along there for discussion would have been nice. It might not pass as a vote, but sea otters are causing a huge impact on our region's economy due to lost fishing.
Senate Bill 60 has been referred to the state Senate Finance, Judiciary, and Resource Committees. In a late-night vote, the Alaska House passed legislation that would change the way water rights are processed. The bill is part of Governor Sean Parnell's efforts to overhaul permitting regulations, and it's prompted some criticism from conservation groups like Trout Unlimited. Representative Eric Fage, a Republican from Chickaloon, characterizes it as a pro-industry reform package.
The overall theme of the bill is to bring some more efficiency, bring better service to the public, and to streamline our permitting system. This goes a long ways to making us more competitive in the world and to help move the resource industry in this state forward.
The bill gives more power to the head of the Natural Resources Department, authorizing the commissioner to grant general permits for activity on state lands, so long as the activity doesn't cause irreparable damage. It sets a higher bar for an administrative appeal of a DNR decision by changing the standard from aggrieved to substantially and adversely affected. The bill also closes off water reservation applications to non-government entities. Right now, Alaska is the only state where individuals can directly petition for specific streams to maintain a certain levels of flow. Opponents of the bill say these changes could put salmon runs at risk. Representative Andy Josephson, an Anchorage Democrat, says the policy changes might also limit public involvement on mining projects.
The bill has far-reaching consequences that were not considered or addressed by the only committee of referral, and it has impacts that are not fully understood even today. One of the significant impacts of this bill will be on the right to water in the Pebble Mine area.
Democrats introduced four amendments to the bill, including one that would have created some protection for fish habitats. While none of these measures passed, some coastal and bush members of the majority broke with their caucus to vote for them. The bill ultimately passed on a 23-14 vote, with Republicans Alan Osterman and Paul Seaton voting against it. Its counterpart is in the Senate, is under consideration by the Finance Committee. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And here's a look at Sitka Zone weather. Today it's going to be sunny, highs around 41 with northwest wind 10 miles per hour. Tonight clear with lows around 34. Tomorrow also sunny, highs around 42. And Friday cloudy with a chance of rain. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.